through at least 100 times. The darkness swirled into muted grays, then the faintest black and white image came into view. A dark bedroom with a single bed. Luce, a former Luce clearly, lying on her side, staring out the open window. She must have been 16 years old. The door behind the bed opened, and a face, lit out by the hallway light, appeared in it. The mother. The mother Luce had gone to see with Shelby. But younger, much younger, maybe by as many as 50 years, glasses perched at the end of her nose. She smiled, as if pleased to find her daughter sleeping, then pulled the door shut. A moment later, a pair of fingertips gripped the bottom of the windowpane. Luce's eyes widened as the former Luce sat up in bed. Outside the window, the fingertips strained, then a pair of hands became visible, then two strong arms, lit up blue in the moonlight. Then Daniel's glowing face as he came in through the window. Luce's heart was racing. She wanted to dive into the announcer, as she'd wanted to yesterday with Shelby. But then Stephen clicked his fingers, and the whole thing snapped up like a Venetian blind rolling to the top of a window frame. Then it broke apart and showered down. The shadow lay in soft fragments on the desk. Luce reached for one, but it disintegrated in her hands. Stephen sat down behind his desk, probing Luce with his eyes, as if to see what the glimpse had done to her. It suddenly felt very private, what she just witnessed in the announcer. She didn't know whether she wanted Stephen to know how powerfully it had rocked her. After all, he was technically on the other side. In the past few days, she'd seen more and more of the demon in him. Not just the fiery temper, welling up until he literally steamed, but the dark, glorious golden wings, too. Stephen was magnetic and charming, just like Cam. And, she reminded herself, just like Cam, a demon. "Why are you helping me with this?"
"Because I don't want you to get hurt," Stephen barely whispered.
"Did that really happen?" Stephen looked away.
"It's a representation of something, and who knows how distorted it is. It's a shadow of a past event, not reality. There is always some truth to the announcer, but it's never the simple truth. That's what makes announcers so problematic, and so dangerous to those without proper training."
He glanced at his watch. From below them came the sound of the door opening and closing on the landing. Stephen stiffened when he heard a quick set of high heels clicking up the stairs. Francesca. Luce tried to read Stephen's face. He handed her the Republic, which she slipped into her backpack. Just before Francesca's beautiful face appeared in the doorway, Stephen said to Luce,
"The next time you and Shelby choose not to complete one of your assignments, I will ask you to write a 5-page research paper with citations. This time, I'm letting you off with a warning."
"I understand." Luce caught Francesca's eye in the doorway. She smiled at Luce, though whether it was an off-you-go dismissal smile or a don't-think-you're-fooling-me-kid smile, it was impossible to tell. Trembling a little as she stood and flung her bag over her shoulder, Luce made for the door, calling back to Stephen. "Thank you." Shelby had the fire going in the hearth when Luce got back to her dorm room. The hot pot was plugged in next to the Buddha nightlight, and the whole room smelled like tomatoes. "We were out of mac and cheese, but I made you some soup." Shelby ladled out a piping hot bowlful, cracked some fresh black pepper on top, and brought it over to Luce, who had collapsed on top of her bed.
"Was it terrible?"
Luce watched the steam rise from her bowl and tried to figure out what to say. Bizarre, yes. Confusing. A little scary. Potentially empowering. But it hadn't been terrible, no. "It was okay." Stephen seemed to trust her, at least to the extent that he was going to allow her to continue summoning the announcers. And the other students seemed to trust him, even admire him. No one else acted concerned about his motives or his allegiances. But with Luce, he was so cryptic, so difficult to read. Luce had trusted the wrong people before. "A careless pursuit at best. At worst, it's a good way to get yourself killed." That was what Miss Sophia had said about trust the night she'd tried to murder Luce. It was Daniel who'd advised Luce to trust her instincts, but her own feelings seemed the most unreliable. She wondered whether Daniel had already known about Shoreline when he told her that, whether his advice was a way to prepare her for this long separation, when she would become less and less certain about everything in her life, her family, her past, her future. She looked up from the bowl at Shelby.
Thanks for the soup.
Don't let Stephen thwart your plans, Shelby huffed. We should totally keep working on the announcers. I am just so sick of these angels and demons and their power trips. Ooh, we know better than you because we're full on angels, and you're just the bastard child of some angel who got his rocks off.
Luce laughed, but she was thinking that Stephen's mini lecture on Plato and giving her the Republic tonight was the opposite of a power trip. Of course, there was no telling Shelby that now, not when she dropped into her usual I'm on a tirade against shoreline routine on Luce's bottom bunk.
I mean, I know you have whatever going on with Daniel, Shelby continued. But seriously, what good has an angel ever done for me?
Luce shrugged apologetically.
I'll tell you, nothing. Nothing besides knock up my mom and then totally ditch both of us before I was born. Real celestial behavior.
Shelby snorted.
The kicker is, my whole life my mom's telling me I should be grateful. For what? These watered-down powers and this enormous forehead I inherited from my dad? No thanks.
She kicked the top bunk glumly.
I'd give anything to just be normal.
Really?
Luce had spent the whole week feeling inferior to her Nephilim classmates. She knew the grass was always greener, but this she couldn't believe. What advantage could Shelby possibly see in not having her Nephilim powers?
Wait, Luce said. The sorry-ass ex-boyfriend, did he?
Shelby looked away. We were meditating together, and, I don't know, somehow during the mantra, I accidentally levitated. It wasn't even a big deal. I was like 2 inches off the floor. But Phil wouldn't let it go. He started bugging me about what else I could do, and asking all these weird questions.
Like what?
I don't know, Shelby said. Some stuff about you, actually. He wanted to know if you'd taught me to levitate, whether you could levitate, too.
Why me?
Probably more of his pervy roommate fantasies. Anyway, you should have seen the look on his face that day, like I was some sort of circus freak. I had no choice but to break things off.
That's awful. Lou squeezed Shelby's hand. But it sounds like his problem, not yours. I know the rest of the kids at Shoreline look at the Nephilim funny, but I've been to a lot of high schools, and I'm starting to think that's just the way most kids' faces naturally bend. Besides, no one's normal. Phil must have had something freakish about him.
Actually, there was something about his eyes. They were blue but faded, almost washed out. He had to wear these special contacts so people wouldn't stare at him.
Shelby tossed her head to the side.
Plus, you know, that third nipple.
She burst out laughing, was red in the face by the time Luce joined in, and practically in tears, when a light tapping on the windowpane shut both of them up.
That better not be him.
Shelby's voice instantly sobered as she hopped up from the bed and flung open the window, knocking over a potted yucca in her haste.
It's for you, she said almost numbly.
Luce was at the window in a heartbeat, because by then she could feel him. Bracing her palms on the sill, she leaned forward into the brisk night air. She was face to face, lip to lip, with Daniel. For the briefest moment, she thought he was looking past her, into the room at Shelby, but then he was kissing her, cupping the back of her head with his soft hands, and pulling her to him, taking her breath away. A week's worth of warmth flowed through her, along with an unspoken apology for the harsh words they'd said the other night on the beach.
Hello, he whispered.
Hello. Daniel was wearing jeans and a white t-shirt. She could see the cowlick in his hair. His tremendous pearl-white wings beat gently behind him, probing the black night, luring her in. They seemed to beat in the sky, almost in time with her heart. She wanted to touch them, to bury herself in them, the way she had the other night on the beach. It was a stunning thing to see him floating outside her third-story window. He took her hand and pulled her over the windowsill and out into the air, and his arms. But then he set her down on a wide, flat ledge under the window that she'd never noticed before. She always felt the urge to cry when she was happiest.
You're not supposed to be here, but I'm so glad you are.
Prove it, he said, smiling, as he pulled her back against his chest so that his head was just over her shoulder. He looped one arm around her waist. Warmth radiated from his wings. When she looked over her shoulder, all she could see was white. The world was white, all softly textured and aglow with moonlight. And then Daniel's great wings began to beat. Her stomach dropped a little, and she knew she was being lifted, No, rocketed, straight into the sky. The ledge below them grew smaller, and the stars above shone brighter, and the wind ripped across her body, tousling her hair across her face. Up they soared, higher into the night, until the school was just a black smudge on the ground below, until the ocean was just a silvery blanket on the earth, until they pierced a feathery layer of cloud. She wasn't cold or afraid. She felt free of everything that weighed her down on earth, free of danger, free of any pain she'd ever felt, free of gravity, and so in love. Daniel's mouth traced a line of kisses up the side of her neck. He wrapped his arms tight around her waist and turned her to face him. Her feet were on top of his, just as when they danced over the ocean at the bonfire. There was no wind anymore. The air around them was silent and calm. The only sounds were the beating of Daniel's wings as they hovered in the sky and the beating of her own heart.
"Moments like this," he said, "make everything we've had to go through worthwhile."
Then he kissed her as he'd never kissed her before. A long, extended kiss that seemed to claim her lips forever. His hands traced the line of her body, lightly at first, and then more forcefully, delighting in her curves. She melted into him, and he ran his fingers along the backs of her thighs, her hips, her shoulders. He took control of every part of her. She felt the muscles beneath his cotton shirt, his taut arms and neck, the hollow at the small of his back. She kissed his jaw, his lips. Here in the clouds, with Daniel's eyes sparkling brighter than any star she'd ever seen, this was where Luce belonged. "Can't we just stay here forever?" she asked. "I'll never get enough of this. Of you."
"I hope not."
Daniel smiled, but soon, too soon, his wings shifted, flattening out. Luce knew what was coming next, a slow descent. She kissed Daniel one last time and loosened her arms from around his neck, preparing herself for flight, but then she lost her grip and fell. It seemed to happen in slow motion, Luce tipping backward, her arms flailing wildly, and then the rush of cold and wind as she plummeted and her breath left her. Her last glimpse was of Daniel's eyes, the shock in his face. But then everything sped up, and she was falling so furiously she couldn't breathe. The world was a spinning black void, and she felt nauseated and scared, her eyes burning from the wind, her vision dimming and tunneling. She was going to pass out. And that would be it. She would never know who she really was, never know whether it had all been worth it, would never know whether she was worthy of Daniel's love and he of hers. It was all over. This was it. The wind was a fury in her ears. She closed her eyes and waited for the end. And then he caught her. There were arms around her, strong, familiar arms, and she was gently slowing, no longer falling. She was being cradled by Daniel. Her eyes were closed, but Luce knew him. She began to sob, so relieved that Daniel had caught her, had saved her. In that moment, she'd never loved him more, no matter how many lifetimes she had lived.
"Are you okay?"
Daniel whispered, his voice soft, his lips so close to hers. "Yes." She could feel the beating of his wings. "You caught me."
"I will always catch you when you fall."
Slowly, they dropped back to the world they'd left behind, to shoreline and the ocean lapping up against the cliffs. When they neared the dormitory, he clasped her tightly and gently coasted to the ledge, alighting with a feather-light touch. Luce planted her feet on the ledge and looked up at Daniel. She loved him. It was the only thing she was certain of.
"There," he said, looking serious.
His smile hardened, and the sparkle in his eyes seemed to fade.
"That should satisfy your wanderlust, at least for a little while."
"What do you mean, wanderlust?"
"The way you keep leaving campus."
His voice held a lot less warmth than it had a moment ago.
"You have to stop doing that when I'm not around to look after you."
"Oh, come on. It was just a stupid field trip. Everyone was there. Francesca, Stephen." She broke off, thinking about the way Stephen had reacted to what had happened to Dawn. She didn't dare bring up her road trip with Shelby, or running into Cam under the deck.
"You've been making things very difficult for me," Daniel said.
"I haven't been having the easiest time either."
"I told you there were rules. I told you not to leave this campus. But you haven't listened. How many times have you disobeyed me?"
Disobeyed you?
She laughed, but inside she felt dizzy and sick.
What are you, my boyfriend or my master?
Do you know what happens when you stray from here? The danger you put yourself in just because you're bored?
Look, the cat's out of the bag, she said. Cam already knew I was here.
Of course Cam knows you're here, Daniel said, exasperated. How many times do I have to tell you Cam is not the threat right now? He won't try to sway you.
Why not?
Because he knows better. And you should know better, too, than to sneak off like that. There are dangers you can't possibly fathom.
She opened her mouth, but didn't know what to say. If she told Daniel she'd spoken with Cam that day, that he'd killed several of Miss Sophia's entourage, it would only prove his point. Anger flared up in Luce, at Daniel, at his mysterious rules, at his treating her like a child. She would have given anything to stay with him, but his eyes had hardened into flat gray sheets, and their time in the sky felt like a distant dream.
Do you understand what kind of hell I go through to keep you safe?
How am I supposed to understand when you don't tell me anything?
Daniel's beautiful features distorted into a scary expression.
Is this her fault?
He jerked his thumb toward her dorm room.
What kind of sinister ideas has she been putting in your head?
I can think for myself, thank you.
Luce narrowed her eyes.
But how do you know Shelby?
Daniel ignored the question. Luce couldn't believe the way he was talking to her, like she was some kind of badly behaved pet. All the warmth that had filled her a moment ago when Daniel had kissed her, held her, looked at her, it wasn't enough when she felt this cold every time he spoke to her.
Maybe Shelby is right, she said.
She hadn't seen Daniel in so long, but the Daniel she wanted to see, the one who loved her more than anything, the one who'd followed her for millennia because he couldn't live without her, was still up there in the clouds, not down here, bossing her around. Perhaps, even after all these lifetimes, she didn't really know him.
Maybe angels and humans shouldn't.
But she couldn't say it.
Luce.
His fingers wrapped around her wrist, but she shook him off. His eyes were open and dark, and his cheeks were white from the cold. Her heart was urging her to grab him and keep him close, to feel his body pressed against hers, but she knew, deep down, that this wasn't the kind of fight that could be cured with a kiss. She pushed past him to a narrower part of the ledge and slid open her window, surprised to find that the room was already dark. She climbed inside, and when she turned back to Daniel, she noticed that his wings were trembling, almost like he was about to cry. She wanted to go back to him, to hold and soothe and love him, but she couldn't. She closed the shutters and stood in her dark room, alone. 9. 10 days. When Luce woke up on Tuesday morning, Shelby was already gone. Her bed was made, the handmade patchwork quilt folded at its foot, and her puffy red vest and tote bag had been plucked from their peg by the door. Still in her pajamas, Luce stuck a mug of water in the microwave to make tea, then sat down to check her email. To lucindap44@gmail.com. From callieallieoxenfree@gmail.com. Send Monday, November 16 at 1:34 a.m. Subject, trying not to take it personally.
Dear Al, got your text, and first things first, I miss you too. But I've got a really out-of-left-field suggestion. It's called You and I Catch Up. Crazy Callie and her wild ideas. I know you're busy, I know you're under heavy surveillance, and it's hard to sneak away. What I don't know is a single detail about your life. Who do you eat lunch with? Which class do you like the most? Whatever happened with that guy? See, I don't even know his name. I hate that. I'm glad you got a phone, but don't text me to say you're going to call. Just call. I haven't heard your voice in ages. I ain't mad at you. Yet. XOC.
Luce closed the email. It was next to impossible to piss Callie off. She'd never actually done it before. The fact that Callie didn't suspect that Luce was lying was only further proof of how distant they'd become. The shame Luce felt was heavy, settling right between her shoulders. On to the next email. 2. LucindaP44@gmail.com. From thegaprices@aol.com. Sent Monday, November 16 at 8:30 p.m. Subject. Well, honey, we love you too.
Luce, baby, your emails always brighten our days. How's the swim team going? Are you drying your hair now that it's cold outside? I know I'm nagging, but I miss you. Do you think Sword and Cross will grant you permission to leave campus for Thanksgiving next week? Dad could call the dean. We won't count our chickens yet, but your father did go out and buy a tofurkey, just in case. I've been filling up the extra freezer with pies. Do you still like the one with the sweet potatoes? We love you, and we think about you all the time. Mom. Lucy's hand hung frozen on her mouse. It was Tuesday morning. Thanksgiving was a week and a half away. It was the first time that her favorite holiday had even crossed her mind. But as quickly as it had come in, Luce tried to banish it. There was no way Mr. Cole would let her go home for Thanksgiving. She was about to click respond when a blinking orange box at the bottom of the screen caught her attention. Miles was online. He'd been trying to chat with her. Miles, 808.
Morning, Miss Luce.
Miles, 809.
I am starving. Do you wake up as hungry as I wake up?
Miles, 8:15.
Want to get breakfast? I'll swing by your room on my way. 5 min.
Luce looked at her clock. 8:21. There was a booming knock on her door. She was still in her pajamas, still had bedhead. She opened the door a little. The morning sun poured onto the hallway's hardwood floors. It reminded Luce of coming down the always sunlit wooden staircase at her parents' house for breakfast, the way the whole world looked brighter through the lens of one hallway, filled with light. Miles wasn't wearing his Dodgers cap today, so it was one of the few times she could clearly see his eyes. They were really deep blue, a 9 o'clock in summer sky blue. His hair was wet, dripping on the shoulders of his white T-shirt. Luce swallowed, unable to stop her mind from picturing him in the shower. He grinned at her, showing off a dimple and his super-white smile. He seemed so California today. Luce was surprised to realize how good he made it look. Hey. Luce wedged as much of her pajamaed body as she could behind the door. I just saw your messages. I'm in for breakfast, but I'm not dressed yet.
I can wait.
Miles leaned against the hallway wall. His stomach growled loudly. He tried to cross his arms over his waist to cover the sound. I'll hurry. Luce laughed, closing the door. She stood before her closet, trying not to think about Thanksgiving, or her parents, or Callie, or why so many important people were slipping away from her at once. She yanked a long gray sweater from her dresser and threw it on over a pair of black jeans. She brushed her teeth, put on big silver hoop earrings and a squirt of hand lotion, grabbed her bag, and studied herself in the mirror. She didn't look like a girl who was stuck in some bickering power struggle of a relationship, or a girl who couldn't go home to her family for Thanksgiving. At the moment, she just looked like a girl who was excited to open a door and find a guy there, who made her feel normal and happy, and really sort of all-around wonderful. A guy who was not her boyfriend. She sighed, opening the door to Miles. His face lit up. When they got outside, Luce realized the weather had changed. The sunlit morning air was just as brisk as it had been on the roof's ledge last night with Daniel. And it had felt icy then. Miles held out his enormous khaki jacket to her, but she waved it away. I just need some coffee to warm me up. They sat at the same table where they'd sat. I just need some coffee to warm me up. They sat at the same table where they'd sat the week before. Immediately, a couple of student waiters rushed over. Both guys seemed to be friends with Miles and had an easy, joking manner. Luce certainly never got this level of service when she sat with Shelby. While the guys fired away with questions, how had Miles's fantasy football team done the night before? Had he watched that YouTube clip of the guy pranking his girlfriend? Did he have plans after class today? Luce looked around the terrace for her roommate, but couldn't find her. Miles answered all the guys' questions, but seemed uninterested in extending the conversation any further. He pointed at Luce.
This is Luce. She wants a big cup of your hottest coffee and...
The scrambled eggs, Luce said, folding up the small menu that the Shoreline Mess Hall printed up each day.
Same for me, guys. Thanks.
Miles handed back the two menus and turned full focus on Luce.
Seems like I haven't seen you around much recently outside class. How are things?
Miles's question surprised her. Maybe because she was already feeling like a guilt magnet this morning. She liked that there was no, where have you been hiding, or are you avoiding me, tacked on at the end. Just a question. How are things? She beamed at him, then somehow lost track of her smile and was almost wincing by the time she said, Things are okay.
Uh-oh.
Horrible fight with Daniel, lying to my parents, losing my best friend. Part of her wanted to unleash all of that on Miles, but she knew she shouldn't. Couldn't. That would be taking their friendship to a level she wasn't sure was a good idea. She'd never had a really close guy friend before, the kind of friend you shared everything with and relied on like a girlfriend. Wouldn't things get complicated?
Miles, she finally said, what do people do around here for Thanksgiving?
I don't know. I guess I've never stuck around to find out. I wish I could sometimes. Thanksgiving at my house is obnoxiously enormous. At least 100 people. Like 10 courses. And it's black tie.
You're joking.
He shook his head.
I wish I were. Seriously, we have to hire parking attendants.
After a pause.
Why do you ask?
Wait, do you need a place to go?
You're coming.
He laughed at her shocked expression.
Please, my brother's not coming home from college this year, and he was my only lifeline. I can show you around Santa Barbara. We can ditch the turkey and get the world's best tacos at Super Rica.
He raised an eyebrow.
It'll be so much less torturous to have you there with me. It might even be fun.
While Luce was mulling over his offer, she felt a hand on her back. She knew the touch by now, soothing to the point of having healing powers, Francesca's.
I spoke to Daniel last night, Francesca said.
Luce tried not to react as Francesca leaned down. Had Daniel gone to see her after Luce had shut him out? The idea made her jealous, though she didn't really know why.
He's worried about you.
Francesca paused, seeming to search Luce's face.
I told him you're doing very well, considering your new surroundings. I told him I would make myself available to you for anything you need. Please understand that you should come to me with your questions.
A sharpness entered her gaze, a hard, fierce quality. Come to me instead of Stephen seemed to lie there unspoken. And then Francesca left, as quickly as she'd appeared, the silk lining of her white wool coat swishing against her black pantyhose.
So, Thanksgiving, Miles finally said, rubbing his hands together.
Okay, okay.
Lou swallowed the rest of her coffee.
I'll think about it.
Shelby didn't show at the Nephilim Lodge for that morning's class, a lecture on summoning angelic forebears, kind of like sending a celestial voicemail. By lunchtime, Luce was starting to get nervous. But heading into her math class, she finally spotted the familiar puffy red vest and practically sprinted toward it.
Hey!
She tugged her roommate's thick blonde ponytail.
Where have you been?
Shelby turned around slowly. The look on her face took Luce back to her very first day at Shoreline. Shelby's nostrils were flared, and her eyebrows were hunched forward.
Are you okay? Luce asked.
Fine.
Shelby turned away and started fiddling with the nearest locker, twirling a combination, then popping it open. Inside were a football helmet and about a case worth of empty Gatorade bottles. A poster of the Laker girls was slapped on the inside of the door.
Is that even your locker? Luce asked.
She didn't know a single Nephilim kid who used a locker, but Shelby was rooting through this one, tossing dirty sweat socks recklessly over her shoulder. Shelby slammed the locker shut, then moved on to twirl the combination of the next one.
Now you're judging me?
No. Luce shook her head.
Shel, what is going on? You disappeared this morning. You missed class.
I'm here now, aren't I?
Shelby sighed.
Frankie and Stephen are a lot more lax about letting a girl take a personal day than the humanoids over here.
Why do you need a personal day? You were fine last night until...
Until Daniel showed up. Right around the time Daniel appeared at the window, Shelby had gone all pale and quiet and straight to bed and... While Shelby stared at Luce as if her IQ had suddenly dropped by half, Luce became aware of the rest of the hall. Where the rust-colored lockers ended, the gray-carpeted walls were lined with girls, Dawn and Jasmine and Lilith, preppy cardiganed girls like Amy Branshaw from Luce's afternoon classes, punky pierced girls who looked kind of like Arian but were way less fun to talk to. A few girls Luce had never seen before. Girls with books clutched against their chests, gum popping in their mouths, and eyes darting at the carpet, at the wood-beamed ceiling, at each other. Anywhere but directly at Luce and Shelby. though it was clear that all of them were eavesdropping. A sick feeling in her stomach was starting to tell her why. It was the biggest collision of Nephilim and non-Nephilim Luce had seen so far at Shoreline, and every girl in this hallway had figured it out before her. Shelby and Luce were about to duke it out over a guy.
Oh, Luce swallowed.
You and Daniel?
Yeah, we, a long time ago.
Shelby wouldn't look at her.
Okay.
Luce focused on breathing. She could handle this, but the whispers flying around the wall of girls made her skin crawl, and she shuddered. Shelby scoffed.
I'm sorry the idea disgusts you so much.
That's not it. But Luce did feel disgusted, disgusted with herself. I thought I was the only... Shelby put her hands on her hips.
You thought every time you disappeared for 17 years that Daniel just twiddled his thumbs? Earth to Luce, there is a before you for Daniel, or an in-between, or whatever.
She paused to give Luce a sideways squint.
Are you really that self-involved?
Luce was speechless. Shelby grunted and turned to face the rest of the hall.
This estrogen force field needs to dissipate, she barked, waggling her fingers at them. Move along, all of you, now.
As the girls scurried off, Luce pressed her head against the cold metal locker. She wanted to crawl inside it and hide. Shelby leaned her back against the wall next to Luce's face.
You know, she said, her voice softening, Daniel's a crap boyfriend, and a liar. He's lying to you.
Luce straightened up and went at Shelby, feeling her cheeks flush. Luce might be pissed off at Daniel right now, but nobody talks smack about her boyfriend.
Whoa!
Shelby ducked away.
Calm down there. Jeez.
She slid down the wall to sit on the floor.
Look, I shouldn't have brought it up. It was one stupid night a long time ago, and the guy was clearly miserable without you. I didn't know you then, so I thought all the lore about you two was supremely boring. Which, if you must know, explains the huge grudge I've held with your name on it.
She patted the floor next to her, and Luce slid down the wall to sit too. Shelby gave a tentative smile.
I swear, Luce, I never thought I'd meet you. I definitely never expected you to be cool.
You think I'm cool? Luce asked, laughing quietly to herself. You were right about me being self-absorbed.
Ah, just what I thought. You're one of those impossible-to-stay-mad-at people, aren't you?
Shelby sighed.
Fine. I'm sorry for going after your boyfriend and, you know, hating you before I knew you. I won't do it again.
This was weird. The thing that could have driven two friends instantly apart was actually drawing them closer together. This wasn't Shelby's fault. Any flash of anger Luce felt about it was something she needed to take up with Daniel. One stupid night, Shelby had said. But what had really happened? Sunset found Luce walking down the rocky steps to the beach. It was cold outside, colder still as she got closer to the water. The day's last rays of light danced off thin sheets of cloud, staining the ocean orange, pink, and pastel blue. The calm sea stretched out in front of her, looking like a path to heaven. Until she got to the wide circle of sand, still blackened from Roland's bonfire, Luce didn't know what she was doing down there. Then she found herself crawling behind the tall lava rock where Daniel had tugged her away, where the two of them had danced and then spent the precious few moments they'd had together fighting about something as stupid as the color of her hair. Callie had once had a boyfriend at Dover, whom she'd broken up with after a fight over a toaster. One of them had jammed the thing with an oversized New York bagel. The other one had flipped out. Luce couldn't remember all the details now, but she remembered thinking, who breaks up over a kitchen appliance? But it was never really about the toaster, Callie had told her. The toaster was just a symptom, something that represented everything else that was wrong between them. Luce hated that she and Daniel kept getting into fights. The one on the beach, over her dye job, reminded her of Callie's story. It felt like a preview of some bigger, uglier argument on the way. Bracing herself against the wind, Luce realized she'd come down here to try to trace where they'd gone wrong the other night. She was idiotically looking for signs in the water, some clue carved into the rough volcanic rock. She was looking everywhere except inside herself. because what was inside Luce was just the vast enigma of her past. Maybe the answers were still somewhere in the announcers, but for now, they remained frustratingly out of her grasp. She didn't want to blame Daniel. She was the one who'd been naive enough to assume that their relationship had been exclusive across time. But he'd never told her otherwise, so he'd practically set her up to walk right into this shock. It was embarrassing. And one more item to tick off on the long list of things that Luce thought she deserved to know and that Daniel didn't see fit to tell her. She felt something she thought was rain, a drizzly sensation on her cheeks and her fingertips. But it was warm instead of cold. It was powdery and light, not wet. She turned her face toward the sky and was blinded by shimmering violet light. Not wanting to shield her eyes, she watched even when it grew so bright it hurt. The particles slowly drifted toward the water just offshore, falling into a pattern and limning the shape she'd know anywhere. He seemed to have grown more gorgeous. His bare feet hovered inches off the water as he approached the shore. His broad white wings seemed to be edged with violet light and were pulsing nearly imperceptibly in the rough wind. It wasn't fair. The way he made her feel when she looked at him, awed and ecstatic and a little bit afraid. She could hardly think of anything else. Every annoyance or nagging frustration vanished. There was just that undeniable pull toward him. "You keep turning up," she whispered. Daniel's voice carried over the water. "I told you I wanted to talk to you." Luce felt her mouth pucker up. "About Shelby?" "About the danger you keep putting yourself in."
Daniel spoke so plainly. She'd been expecting her mention of Shelby to elicit some reaction, but Daniel just cocked his head.
He reached the wet edge of the beach, where the water foamed and rolled away, and floated just above the sand in front of her.
"What about Shelby?"
"Are you really going to pretend like you don't know?"
"Hold on."
Daniel lowered his feet to the ground, bending his knees in a deep plié when his bare soles touched the sand. When he straightened, his wings pulled backward, away from his face, and sent a wave of wind back with them. Luce got her first sense of how heavy they must be. It took less than 2 seconds for Daniel to reach her, but when his arm slipped around her back and pulled her to him, he couldn't have come quickly enough.
"Let's not get off to another bad start," he said.
She closed her eyes and let him lift her off the ground. His mouth found hers, and she tilted her face to the sky, letting the feel of him overwhelm her. There was no darkness, no more cold, just the lovely sensation of being bathed in his violet glow. Even the rush of the ocean was canceled out by a soft hum, the energy Daniel carried in his body. Her hands were wrapped tight around his neck, then stroked the firm muscles on his shoulders, brushing the soft, thick perimeter of his wings. They were strong and white and shimmering, always so much bigger than she remembered. 2 great sails extending from his sides, every inch of them perfect and smooth. She could feel a tension against her fingers, like touching a tightly stretched canvas, but silkier and deliciously velvet soft. They seemed to respond to her touch, even extending forward to rub against her, pulling her closer until she was buried in them, nestling deeper and deeper, and still never getting enough. Daniel shuddered.
"Is this okay?" she whispered, because sometimes he grew nervous when things between them started to heat up. "Does it hurt you?"
Tonight his eyes looked greedy.
"It feels wonderful. Nothing compares."
His fingers glided along her waist, slipping inside her sweater. Usually, the softest caress from Daniel's hands made her go weak. Tonight, his touch was more forceful, almost rough. She didn't know what had gotten into him, but she liked it. His lips traced hers, then drifted higher, following the bridge of her nose, coming down tenderly on each of her eyelids. When he pulled back, she opened her eyes and gazed at him.
"You're so beautiful," he whispered.
It was exactly what most girls would have wanted to hear. Only, as soon as he said it, Luce felt ripped out of her body, replaced by someone else's. Shelby's. But not just Shelby's, because what were the odds that she had been the only one? Had other eyes and noses and cheekbones taken Daniel's kisses? Had other bodies huddled with him on a beach? Other lips tangled, other hearts pounded? Had other whispered compliments been exchanged?
"What's wrong?" he asked.
Luce felt sick. They could steam up windows with their kisses, but as soon as they started using their mouths for other things, like talking, everything got so complicated. She turned her face away.
"You lied to me."
Daniel didn't scoff or get angry, as she was expecting him to, almost wanting him to. He sat down on the sand. He propped his hands on his knees and stared out at the frothy waves.
"About what, exactly?"
Even as the words came out, Luce regretted where she was going. "I could take your approach, not tell you anything, ever."
"I can't tell you whatever it is you want to know if you won't tell me what's bothering you."
She thought about Shelby, but when she imagined playing the jealousy card, only to have him treat her like a child, Luce felt pathetic. Instead, she said, "I feel like we're strangers, like I don't know you any better than anyone else."
"Oh."
His voice was quiet, but his face was so infuriatingly stoic, Luce wanted to shake him. Nothing riled him up.
"You're holding me hostage out here, Daniel. I know nothing. I know no one. I'm lonely. Every time I see you, you've put up some new wall, and you never let me in. You never let me in. You dragged me all the way out here."
She was thinking to California, but it was more than that. Her past, what limited conception of it that she had, rolled out in her mind like the dropped reel of a movie, unwinding onto the floor. Daniel had dragged her much, much further than California. He'd dragged her through centuries of fights like this one, through agonizing deaths that caused pain to everyone around her, like those nice old people she'd visited last week. Daniel had ruined that couple's life, killed their daughter, all because he'd been some hotshot angel who saw something he wanted and went after it. No, he hadn't just dragged her to California. He dragged her into a cursed eternity, a burden that should have been his alone to bear. "I am suffering, me and everyone who loves me, for your curse, for all time, because of you."
He winced as though she'd struck him. "You want to go home," he said.
She kicked the sand.
"I want to go back. I want you to take back whatever it was you did to get me into this. I just want to live and die a normal life and break up with normal people over normal things, like toasters, not the supernatural secrets of the universe that you don't even trust me with."
"Hold on."
Daniel's face had gone completely white. His shoulders stiffened and his hands were shaking. Even his wings, which moments ago had seemed so powerful, looked frail. Luce wanted to reach out and touch them, as if somehow they would tell her whether the pain she saw in his eyes was real, but she held her ground.
"Are we breaking up?"
he asked, his voice weak and low.
"Are we even together, Daniel?"
He got to his feet and cupped her face. Before she could jerk away, she felt the heat subside from her cheeks. She closed her eyes, trying to resist the magnetic force of his touch, but it was so strong, stronger than anything else. It erased her anger, left her identity in tatters. Who was she without him? Why did the pull toward Daniel always defeat anything that pulled her away? Reason, sensibility, self-preservation, none of them could ever compete. It must have been part of Daniel's punishment, that she was bound to him forever, like a marionette to its puppeteer. She knew she shouldn't want him with every fiber of her being, but she couldn't help herself. Gazing at him, feeling his touch, the rest of the world faded into the background. She just wished loving him didn't always have to be so hard.
"What's this business about wanting a toaster?" Daniel whispered in her ear.
"I guess I don't know what I want."
"I do."
His eyes were intent, holding hers.
"I want you."
"I know, but..."
"Nothing will ever change that, no matter what you hear, no matter what happens."
"But I need more than to be wanted. I need for us to be together, actually together."
"Soon, I promise. All of this is only temporary."
"So you've said."
Luce saw that the moon had risen overhead. It was brilliant orange and waning, a quiet blaze.
"What did you want to talk to me about?"
Daniel tucked her blonde hair behind her ear, examining the lock for way too long.
"School," he said, with a hesitancy that made her think he was being less than truthful. "I asked Francesca to look after you, but I wanted to see for myself.
Are you learning anything? Are you having an okay time?
She felt the sudden urge to brag to him about her work with the announcers, about her talk with Stephen, and the glimpses she'd had of her parents. But Daniel's face looked more eager and open than she'd seen it all evening. He seemed to be trying to avoid a fight, so Luce decided to do the same. She closed her eyes. She told him what he needed to hear. School was fine. She was fine. Daniel's lips came down on hers again, briefly, hotly, until her whole body was tingling.
"I have to go," he said at last, getting to his feet. "I shouldn't even be here, but I cannot keep myself away from you. I worry about you in every waking moment. I love you, Luce. So much it hurts."
She closed her eyes against the beat of his wings and the sting of the sand he raised in his wake.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Torment by Lauren Cade. 10, 9 days. An echoing series of whooshes and clangs cut through the Song of Ospreys. A long singing note of metal scraping metal, then the clash of the thin silver blade glancing off its opponent's guard. Francesca and Stephen were fighting. Well, no, they were fencing. A demonstration for the students who were about to stage matches of their own.
Knowing how to wield a sword, whether it's the light foils we're using today or something as dangerous as a cutlass, is an invaluable skill, Stephen said, slicing the point of his sword through the air in short, whip-like movements. The armies of heaven and hell rarely engage in battle, but when they do...
Without looking, he snapped his blade sideways toward Francesca, and without looking, she brought her sword up and parried the blow.
They remain untouched by modern warfare. Daggers, bows, and bolts, giant flaming swords, these are our eternal tools.
The duel that followed was for show, merely a lesson. Francesca and Stephen weren't even wearing masks. It was late in the morning on Wednesday, and Luce was seated on the deck's wide bench between Jasmine and Miles. The entire class, including their two teachers, had changed out of their regular clothes into the white outfits fencers always wore. Half the class held black mesh face masks in their hands. Luce had arrived at the supply closet just after the last face mask had been snagged, which hadn't bothered her at all. She was hoping to avoid the embarrassment of having the entire class witness her cluelessness. It was obvious from the way the others were making lunges at the sides of the deck that they had been through these practices before. "The idea is to present as small a target for your opponent as possible," Francesca explained to the circle of students surrounding her. "So you set your weight on one foot and lead with your sword foot, and then rock back and forth into striking range and then away." She and Stephen were suddenly engaged in a rush of jabs and parries, making a dense clatter as they expertly fought off each other's blows. When her blade glanced wide to the left, he lunged forward, but she rocked back, sweeping her sword up and around and onto his wrist. "Touché," she said, laughing. Stephen turned to the class.
"Touché, of course, is French for touched. In fencing, we count points by touches."
"Were we fighting for real," Francesca said, "I'm afraid that Stephen's hand would be lying bloody on the deck. Sorry, darling."
"Quite all right," he said. "Quite all right."
He threw himself sideways at her, almost seeming to rise off the ground. In the frenzy that followed, Luce lost track of Stephen's sword as it crisscrossed through the air again and again, nearly slicing into Francesca, who ducked sideways just in time and resurfaced behind him. But he was ready for her and knocked her blade away before dropping the point of his and striking out at her instep.
"I'm afraid you, my dear, have gotten off on the wrong foot."
"We'll see." Francesca raised a hand and smoothed her hair, the two of them staring at each other with murderous intensity. Each new round of violent play caused Luce to tense up in alarm. She was used to being jittery, but the rest of the class was also surprisingly jittery today. Jittery with excitement. Watching Francesca and Stephen, not one of them could keep still. Until today, she'd wondered why none of the other Nephilim played on any of Shoreline's varsity sports teams. Jasmine had scrunched up her nose when Luce asked whether she and Don were interested in swim team tryouts in the gym. In fact, until she'd overheard Lilith in the locker room this morning, yawning that every sport except fencing was exquisitely boring. Luce had figured the Nephilim just weren't athletic. But that wasn't it at all. They just chose carefully what to play. Luce winced as she imagined Lilith, who knew the French translation for all the fencing terms Luce didn't even know in English, throwing her svelte, spiteful self into an attack. If the rest of the class were one-tenth as skilled as Francesca and Stephen, Luce was going to end up a pile of body parts by the end of the session. Her teachers were obvious experts, stepping lithely in and out of lunges. Sunlight glinted off their swords, off their white padded vests. Francesca's thick blonde waves cascaded out in a gorgeous halo around her shoulders as she spun around Stephen. Their feet wove patterns on the deck with such grace, the match looked almost like a dance. The expressions on their faces were dogged and full of a brutal determination to win. After those first few touches, they were evenly matched. They must have been getting tired. They'd been fencing for more than 10 minutes without a hit. They began to fence so quickly that the arcs of their blades all but disappeared. There were only a fine fury and a faint buzz in the air, and the constant crack of their foils against one another. Sparks began to fly each time their swords connected. Sparks of love or hatred. There were moments when it almost looked like both. And that unnerved Luce, because love and hate were supposed to stand cleanly on opposite sides of the spectrum. The division seemed as clear as, well, angels and demons would once have seemed to her. Not anymore. As she watched her teachers in awe and fear, memories of last night's argument with Daniel fenced through her mind. And her own feelings of love and hate, or if not quite hate, a building fury, knotted up within her. A cheer rang out from her classmates. It felt like Luce had only blinked, but she'd missed it. The point of Francesca's sword jabbed into Stephen's chest, close to the heart. She pressed against him to the point where her thin blade bent into an arc. Both of them stood still for a moment, looking each other in the eye. Luce couldn't tell whether this, too, was part of the show. "Right through my heart," Stephen said. "As if you had one," Francesca whispered. The two teachers seemed momentarily unaware that the deck was full of students. "Another win for Francesca," Jasmine said. She tipped her head toward Luce and dropped her voice. "She comes from a long line of winners. Stephen, not so much." The comment seemed loaded, but Jasmine just bounded lightly off the bench, slid her mask over her face, and tightened her ponytail. Ready to go. As the other students started bustling around her, Luce tried to picture a similar scene between her and Daniel, Luce taking the upper hand, holding him at the mercy of her sword, as Francesca had Stephen. It was, frankly, impossible to imagine. And that bothered Luce, not because she wanted to lord it over Daniel, but because she didn't want to be the one ruled over either. The night before, she'd been too much at his mercy. Remembering that kiss made her anxious, flushed, and overwhelmed, and not in a good way. She loved him, but she should have been able to think the phrase without tacking on that ugly little conjunction, but she couldn't. What they had right now was not what she wanted, and if the rules of the game were always going to stay this way, she just didn't know if she even wanted to play. What kind of match was she for Daniel? What kind of match was he for her? If he'd been drawn to other girls, at some point he must have wondered, too. Could someone else give them each a more level playing field? When Daniel kissed her, Luce knew in her bones that he was her past. Folded into his embrace, she was desperate for him to remain her present. But the second their lips parted, she couldn't really be sure he was her future. She needed the freedom to make that decision one way or the other. She didn't even know what else was out there.
"Miles!" Stephen called.
He was fully back in teacher mode, sheathing his sword in a narrow black leather case and nodding to the northwest corner of the deck.
"You'll match with Roland over here."
On her left, Miles leaned in to whisper.
"You and Roland go back a ways. What's his Achilles heel? I am not going to lose to the new kid."
I don't really... Luce's mind went blank. Looking over at Roland, whose mask already covered his face, she realized how very little she knew about him, other than his catalog of black market goods, and his harmonica playing, and the way he'd made Daniel laugh so hard that first day at Sword and Cross. She'd still never found out what they'd been talking about, or what Roland was really doing at Shoreline anyway. When it came to Mr. Sparks, Luce was definitely in the dark. Miles patted her knee.
Luce, I was kidding. There's no way that guy's not going to kick my ass.
He stood up, laughing.
Wish me luck.
Francesca had moved to the other side of the deck, near the entrance to the lodge, and was sipping a bottle of water.
Christy and Millicent, take this corner, she told two Nephilim girls, with pigtails and matching black sneakers. Shelby and Don, come match right here.
She gestured to the corner of the deck, directly in front of Luce.
The rest of you will watch.
Luce was relieved her own name hadn't been called. The more she saw of Francesca and Stephen's teaching method, the less she understood it. One intimidating demonstration took the place of any real instruction. Not watch and learn, but straight to watch and excel. As the first six students took their places on the deck, Luce felt huge pressure to pick up the entire art of fencing right away.
On guard,
Shelby bellowed, lunging backward into a squat, with the tip of her sword just inches from Dawn, whose sword was still sheathed. Dawn's fingers were zigzagging through her short black hair, pinning sections of it back with a brimming handful of butterfly clips.
You can't unguard me while I'm prepping for battle, Shelby.
Her high voice got even higher when she was frustrated.
What were you, raised by wolves?
She huffed through the last plastic barrette between her teeth.
Okay, she said, drawing her sword. Now I'm ready.
Shelby, who'd been holding her deep lunge throughout Dawn's primp session, now straightened up and looked down at her rough nail beds.
Wait, do I have time for a manicure? She said, psyching Dawn out just long enough to allow her to drop into an offensive stance and swing her sword around.
How uncouth, Dawn barked,
but to Luce's surprise, she instantly ratcheted up her swordsmanship, swishing her blade skillfully through the air and knocking Shelby's aside. Dawn was a fencing badass. Next to Luce, Jasmine was doubled over, laughing.
A match made in hell.
A smile had crept onto Luce's face, too, because she'd never met anyone as unshakably upbeat as Dawn. At first, Luce had suspected phoniness, a facade. Where Luce came from, the South, that always happy bit wouldn't have been real. But Luce had been impressed by how quickly Dawn rebounded after that day on the yacht. Dawn's optimism seemed to know no limits. By now, it was hard for Luce to be around the girl without chuckling. And it was especially hard when Dawn was focusing her girly cheer on beating the crap out of someone as bleakly opposite as Shelby. Things between Luce and Shelby were still a little weird. She knew it. Shelby knew it. Even the Buddha nightlight in their room seemed to know it. The truth was, Luce kind of enjoyed seeing Shelby fighting for her life while Dawn happily attacked her. Shelby was a steady, patient fighter. Where Dawn's technique was showy and eye-catching, her limbs whirling in a virtual tango across the deck, Shelby was careful with her lunges, almost as if she had only so many to ration out. She kept her knees bent and never gave up anything. Yet she'd said she had given up on Daniel after one night. Had been quick to say it was because of Daniel's feelings for Luce, that they interfered with everything else. But Luce didn't believe her. Something was weird about Shelby's confession. Something didn't match up with Daniel's reaction when Luce had almost sort of brought it up the night before. He'd acted like there wasn't anything to tell. A loud thump snapped Luce back to attention. Across the deck, Miles had somehow landed on his back. Roland hovered over him. Literally, he was flying. The enormous wings that had unfurled from Roland's shoulders were as large as a great cape and feathered like an eagle's, but with a beautiful golden marbling woven through their dark pinions. He must have had the same slits cut into his fencing garb that Daniel had in his T-shirt. Luce had never seen Roland's wings before, and, like the other Nephilim, she couldn't stop staring. Shelby had told her that only a very few Nephilim had wings, and none of them went to Shoreline. Seeing Roland's come out in a battle, even a practiced sword fight, sent a ripple of nervous excitement through the crowd. The wings commanded so much attention, it took Luce a moment to realize that the tip of Roland's sword was hovering just over Miles's breastbone, pinning him to the ground. Roland's bright white fencing suit and golden wings cut a stark silhouette against the dark, lush trees bordering the deck. With his black mesh mask pulled down, Roland looked even more intimidating, more menacing than if she'd been able to see his face. She hoped his expression would look playful, because he really had Miles in a vulnerable situation. Luce jumped to her feet to go to him, surprised to find her knees shaking.
"Oh my God, Miles!" Dawn called out from across the deck, forgetting her own battle, just long enough for Shelby to go in with a whip over, touch Dawn's unshielded chest, and score the winning point.
"Not the most sportsmanlike way to win," Shelby said, sheathing her sword. "But sometimes that's the way it goes." Luce hurried past them and the rest of the Nephilim who weren't engaged in duels to Roland and Miles. Both were panting. By then, Roland had settled to the ground, his wings retracted inside his skin. Miles looked fine. It was Luce who couldn't stop trembling.
"You got me."
Miles laughed nervously, pushing away the point of the sword.
"Didn't see your secret weapon coming."
"Sorry, man," Roland said sincerely.
"Didn't mean to unleash the wings on you. Sometimes that just happens when I get going."
"Well, good game. Up until then, anyway." Miles raised his right hand to be helped off the ground.
"Do they say good game in fencing?"
"No, no one says that." Roland flipped up his mask with one hand and, grinning, dropped the sword from his other. He grasped Miles's hand and pulled him up in one swift move.
"Good game yourself."
Luce let out her breath. Of course Roland wasn't really going to harm Miles. Roland was offbeat and unpredictable, but he wasn't dangerous, even if he had sided with Cam that last night in the Sword and Cross Cemetery. But there was no reason to fear him. Why had she been so nervous? Why couldn't she get her heart to stop racing? Then she understood why. It was because of Miles. Because he was the closest friend she had at Shoreline. All she knew was that recently, every time she was around Miles, it made her think of Daniel and how a lot of things between them were sort of dragging, and how sometimes, secretly, she wished Daniel could be a little bit more like Miles, cheerful and easygoing, attentive and naturally sweet, less caught up in things like being damned since the dawn of time. A flash of white rushed past Luce and straight into Miles's arms. "Dawn." She leaped onto Miles, her eyes closed and her mouth in an enormous grin.
"You're alive."
"Alive?" Miles set her back down on her feet. "I barely got the wind knocked out of me. Good thing you've never come to watch one of the football games."
Standing behind Dawn, watching as she petted Miles where the sword had skimmed his white vest, Luce felt oddly embarrassed. It wasn't like she wanted to be petting Miles, right? She just wanted... she didn't know what she wanted.
"Want this?"
Roland appeared at her side, handing her the mask he'd been using.
"You're up next, aren't you?"
"Me? No." She shook her head. "Isn't the bell about to ring?" Roland shook his head.
"Nice try. Just own it, and no one's going to know you've never fenced before."
"I doubt that." Luce fingered the thin mesh screen. "Roland, I have to ask you..."
"No, I wasn't going to run Miles through. Why did everyone get so freaked out?"
"I know that," she tried to smile. "It's about Daniel."
"Luce, you know the rules."
"What rules?"
"I can get a lot of things, but I can't get Daniel for you. You're just gonna have to wait it out."
"Wait, Roland, I know he can't be here right now. But what rules? What are you talking about?" He pointed behind her. Francesca was beckoning toward Luce with a finger. The other Nephilim had all taken seats on the benches, except for a few students who looked like they were preparing defense. Jasmine and a Korean girl named Sylvia, two tall, skinny boys whose names Luce could never keep straight, and Lilith, standing alone, examining the blunt rubber tip of her sword with careful scrutiny. "Luce," Francesca said in a low voice. She motioned to the space on the deck in front of Lilith. "Take your place."
"Trial by fire,"
Roland whistled, patting Luce on the back.
"Show no fear."
There were only five other students standing in the middle of the deck, but to Luce, it felt as though there were 100.
Francesca stood with her arms folded casually over her chest. Her face was serene, but to Luce it looked like a forced serenity. Maybe she intended for Luce to lose in the most brutal, embarrassing match possible. Why else would she pit Luce against Lilith, who towered over Luce by at least a foot, and whose fiery red hair protruded from behind her mask like a lion's mane?
"I've never done this," Luce said lamely.
"It's okay, Luce. You don't need to be skilled yet," Francesca said. "We're trying to gauge your relative capacity. Just remember what Stephen and I showed you at the start of the session, and you'll do fine." Lilith laughed and whipped the point of her foil in a broad Z. "The mark of